Medical information obtained from our website or on the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If you have, or you suspect you might, have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a healthcare provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of the sports doctor, this radio show, or their sponsors.
Hey, everybody, live from Chicago. It's the Sports Doctor. I'm Dr. Bob Weil, sports podiatrist. All things sports medicine, fitness, and wellness. We've got a great doubleheader today. Sarah Auster, she's a sound therapist, meditation teacher, works with corporations in the world of mindfulness. She's the author of the very soon upcoming book, Sound Bath. She's also a composer. And she'll be joining me. And then we've got Coach Reed Malti. You know our interest on the Sports Doctor about youth sports. Coach Reed is a world-renowned speaker, a developing author, providing coaches with the skills, tools, and knowledge for raising excellence in every child. Then the Sports Doctor's in, answering some emails, talking about upcoming shows. First, let's jump right in. Sarah Auster, welcome to the Sports Doctor. Give us a little bit of background on yourself leading into your world of sound therapy.
Oh, okay. So my background in education is in art and music. Both of those things have always been a very important part of my life. And then in 2002, I had a pretty traumatic accident that left me with a broken back and chronic pain, and really an inability to continue my work as a musician and artist. And then, so it sort of forced me to look beyond traditional Western medical treatments, and I began to discover and explore yoga and meditation. And I found that many of those practices were really powerfully therapeutic and important in my recovery. And they were certainly ways that I was able to access my own healing process from within versus looking towards external sources. And so through that process of my own healing, I began to teach yoga and meditation, and then I slowly began to integrate sound into those offerings.
I think it's a great title that you use in your book title, Sound Bath. That was terrific when you talk about vibration. You talk about the whole body being tuned in. And again, whether it's in the area of wellness, I know that you've worked with, by the way, everybody, Sarah's been in front of, I think, 10,000 people at Madison Square Garden. She's been at various museums, other types of corporate entities, talking about this very, very topic of whether you're looking to reduce stress, whether you're looking to enhance recovery, deal with an illness. On the Sports Doctor, Sarah, we've always made a very, very big deal of what I call the mental game. And, you know, it seems like the therapy of sound has been around for, is it a million years plus a couple of weeks? What do you think it is?
Yeah.
Am I close?
That sounds about right. Yeah. Maybe longer.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, sound baths can... they create a very accessible entry point to wellness, I feel, because listening to sound is obviously a very universal experience. And as you mentioned, for at least centuries, we know, it's been used as a tool to access a lot of different things, for celebration, it's a way to communicate, it's a way to gather and connect. It's a way to help motivate you through an intense workout. You know, you put on a fast pop song and you can run a little bit faster. So, you know, we've always accessed sound in different ways as humans to help and enhance our experience of life.
Yeah, the mind-body connections become a very, very big deal. Almost every health club now pays big attention to it. You know, another discipline that goes back seems forever, you had experiences, yoga, where individuals not only are working with their body, working themselves physically, they're also getting a mind connection, even a spiritual connection. And mind-body has become a very big deal, again, in the highest level of sports, where everybody has really realized how important it is to try to unwind, to try to relax, enhance recovery when the pressure is on regarding dealing with playing every day and the pressures that come with playing. And I found something very interesting when I was listening to some of your sound baths. Like I said, I think it's a terrific title. And you were talking about while people are kind of relaxing, they're getting into a meditation type state, and then you're adding all sorts of different sounds, whether it's bowls or gongs or chimes, and you're mentioning don't just listen with your ears, listen with your body, the area of vibration. You know, vibration medicine is also a big deal in this day and age, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, when I say, you know, not, don't just listen with your ears, but with your whole body, it's because your body and your skin can actually feel the resonance of vibration. And even if you have never been to a sound bath, you know this because if you're standing in front of a loud speaker, even if you put your hands in your ears, you might still feel the vibration of the sound. And so when you bring your awareness to that, to the sound happening in the present moment, it helps you to sort of relax and settle.
And again, this is a huge component of healing. This is a huge component of dealing with stress that everybody is involved with, again, whether they happen to be an athlete or not. And I think the medical field's acceptance, Sarah, of your world has really come a long way, baby, hasn't it?
Yeah, and I think, you know, of course, the important word is complementary. You know, and I certainly am not saying that sound itself is the medicine, but it's certainly the practice of deep listening and, like we said, getting into this relaxed state where natural healing can occur in the body. It can only enhance the healing process, no matter what's going on, whether it's mental or physical. If we're not taking the time to slow down and rest for recovery, then it's very difficult for our body to recover, to heal itself.
Yes, and of course, they used to call it the adjacent medicine, or they would call it alternative medicine. And this is when we changed the definition, actually, or the description, maybe 10 years ago, and said complementary medicine makes so much sense as a title. And again, I have Eastern and Western medical cultures on the Sports Doctor for years. As we've understood the fact that there's so much more involved. And if we're talking alternative, it makes people think it's one or the other instead of saying we're talking complementary here. We're talking about adding these important systems. Everybody listening to the Sports Doctor live from Chicago, I'm Dr. Bob Weil, sports podiatrist. Go to my website, sportsdoctorradio.com. You can go over to radio shows. You can go back over 10 years. When I go back further than that, we're using reels to reels, really, on shows. But you could see who the guests were from all over the world. You could see what the topics are and listen to whatever you would like. If you go over to newspaper articles, magazines, you can read some of my latest articles in Lower Extremity Review, whether your child should be specializing or not. What is the best shoe for you or your child. What are we going to do in this world of concussions and football, et cetera, et cetera? We also have over 30,000 followers on Twitter. I can't tell you how many guests I get from Twitter, authors, doctors, other kinds of trainers. And if you go to @sportdoc, DOC Radio, you could tune in. We always have a lot of information. We're talking with Sarah Oster, sound therapist, author of the upcoming book, Sound Bath. And we were just talking about some of these different, again, therapeutic areas of adding something like sound meditation to whatever people happen to be doing. Talk a little bit about when you're involved with corporations, and you've been with Google and some of these large companies, are you also working with them to kind of get them to learn how to relax?
Yeah, it depends. That's one way, but it depends on the focus and the theme of the exercise. So I've been invited to facilitate sound baths as part of a team building to help people kind of come together through having a shared experience. But I've also gone into various corporations to, you know, talk about different types of mindfulness practices and how to integrate them throughout your workday and things like that.
You know, it's a great word, mindfulness. 15 years ago, medicine and didn't know how to spell the word mindfulness. They didn't know if it had like one L or two. 25 years ago, they couldn't spell the word wellness. They couldn't tell if it had one L or two. You know, being in the moment, and again, team building, some of these other aspects, a company enhancing high performance in their individuals by adding something like this. I don't know. You've got some great stuff online, Sarah. What's the best website for people to find out about your work, your book? I know there's some great examples of SoundBath. What's the best access?
The best way is sarahauster.com, S-A-R-A-A-U-S-T-E-R.com. And on my website, I have information about sound baths. I have recordings available so you can have a sound bath experience at home. I have information about my book and upcoming events. I lead trainings and workshops. I have retreats.
How long have you been involved with sound therapy, sound bath, would you say?
Probably about.
I mean, I don't want to age you or anything, but how long have you been involved?
Yeah, just about a decade. Yeah,
I bet you found your background also as a composer. You know, and it would fit right in to what you would be doing. What are some of the I don't know if the word instruments is the right word. What are some of the things you use when you are doing a sound bath regarding the music and or the sound?
I would definitely call them instruments, for sure. So the instruments that I use during the sound bath and the sounds that I choose to play are kind of varied each time, in that the instruments might be the same, but the order or the sequence can often be improvisational depending on what the room is like, what other sounds are in the environment, what I'm noticing from the group. So the way that I play them is different each time.
What was it like to be playing, quote unquote, in front of how many thousand, 10,000 people at Madison Square Garden?
10,000 people was in Prospect Park, actually.
Okay, I got but, the wrong location.
Yeah, it's
so
pretty
I'm
powerful.
Blame your
I mean,
father
I,
for that. Yeah.
No, it's fine. I've facilitated a sound bath in Madison Square Garden.
Yes.
I have, yes, and it's
so
really
what
powerful.
What I find interesting, yes, is whether you've got a group of 3 or 5 or 10, or whether you're incorporating a group of hundreds or thousands, I find that's an amazing variety.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about what it feels like to be in a big group like that, having a shared experience, you know, whether it's a parade or a concert or, you know, something where there are a lot of people doing the same thing, it's a really powerful experience. So when you have that large of a group coming together to be quiet and listen and be receptive and open, it's a really beautiful thing to witness and also to be part of.
So you continue to have your capability as a composer, right? Putting together some of these probably endless arrangements that you're using. So, you know, you might, you might use bowls and you might use other kinds of instruments.
Singing bowls. Yep, gongs, tuning forks. And yes, I create unique recordings for all different types of purposes. I have recordings on different various meditation apps. I've created sounds for spas and meditation spaces. So that's another way that I work with sound.
Minutes we have left, talk about your book and some of the things you're really stressing and hoping to get across in the book Soundbath.
1 minute.
Oh, I can't believe we almost ran out of time, Sarah.
I gotta have you
give me the website again.
Okay.
For your work.
Of course. So the book is called Sound Bath, Meditate, Heal, and Connect Through Listening. And you can find information about it at sarahauster.com, SARAAUSTER.com. And the book is really about how sound and deep listening really have the power to be transformative. So
I bet you're going to see this is going to be added to lots of sports teams. Sarah Auster, sound therapist, Sound Bath. Thanks so much, Sarah. Hold on. We'll be right back, everybody. It's the Sports Doc.
Thanks, Dr. Bob. Thank you.
Hey, everybody. It's Dr. Bob Weil, a sports doctor. I'm excited to announce the release of my new book, co-written with Sharkey Zartman, hashtag Hey Sports Parents, an essential guide for any parent with a child in sports. You know, Sharkey is a former Hall of Fame volleyball player. She's the mom of two daughters who became Division I volleyball players. Together, we have over 70 years of combined youth sports experience. The goal of the book? Give you the essential tools and guidance to make your experience as a sports parent the best it could be. Hashtag Hey Sports Parents is divided into four sections. The first section, Sports Parenting 101. Sharkey talks everything about parenting, about coaching, that whole interaction between parents and coaches, coaching your own kid. What are the things to really pay attention to? The second section is the Sports Doctor's In, yours truly. My discussion of injury prevention and treatment, choosing the best shoes, youth sports and drugs, essential exercises, the dilemma of youth football, orthotics. Third section, experts speak out. We bring together eight different experts in nutrition and sports performance and mental training in all aspects of coaching in that section. The last section is the parents' perspective, some insights from about a half a dozen parents of athletes. So everyone, hey, get out your megaphone, spread the word. Now available on Amazon. Order now. You'll be more confident. So will your young athlete. Hashtag, hey sports parents. Hey, everybody. Welcome back live from Chicago. It's the Sports Doctor. I'm Dr. Bob Weil, sports podiatrist. And I want to welcome Coach Reed Mulphy. He's the founder of Raising Excellence. He's a coach training coaches. He's the co-creator of Positive Discipline Tools for Coaches. Also co-creator, Join the Coaches Realm. Everybody on the Sports Doctor, you know my passion with youth sports. Coach Reed, welcome to the Sports Doctor.
Thank you for having me. Excited to chat with you.
Great. Give us a little bit of quickie background, Coach, about what you do and things that are important in your world.
Happy to. So I recently, interestingly enough, spent some time with my mentor who created the Positive Discipline Tools for Coaches with me and really clarified what it was, because my kids and my wife would tell everybody, I don't know what to, or would tell me, I don't know what to tell people what you do when they ask. So it all boils down to one thing. It's all about better coaching for a better world. That's what I do. I work with coaches to help them learn how to involve children and in the learning journey actively, using encouraging communication to inspire excellence in them, help them develop those values and life skills in children. And so everything that coaches don't get typically in licensing clinics or in sports-specific clinics, I try to give them those tools that they need to succeed as an all-around coach, coaching human beings, not just athletes.
Yeah, and who was your co-creator with the Positive, your mentor?
Dr. Jane Nelson, who's 82 years old. She's been doing it for 40-some years now.
Rock and roll. Of course, everybody who listens to the Sports Doctor knows my passion for youth sports. The reason I co-authored the book, hashtag Hey Sports Parents, was the fact that there is an epidemic with a capital E in youth sports overuse injuries, both physically and mentally. Overkill times 10. And the challenge of education, you're part of the team of people that I include in the Sports Doctor, whether it's the National Alliance of Youth Sports, whether it's working with parents in sports in England, whether it's our friend Ian Goldberg and iSport 360, the importance of continuing the education of youth coaches, on the one hand, tremendously commendable. On the other hand, you know, what is it you do? What are you, nuts? When it comes to these kinds of situations. And what's your experience on how the world of coaches are doing with all of these challenges? It seems we've come a long way, but you don't see a season go by without, whether it's ranting, raving parents on the sidelines, whether it's all these other areas of youth injuries, whether it's tremendous expense of this. How do you see that world going from your perspective?
I think we're making improvements, but the improvements are really slow because we've got a few factors in place here. One, there's this fear of change. So people, when we don't know something, we don't know what to expect from something, we're not familiar with something, we fear it. Humans just absolutely fear change. And the problem is change is the only constant we have. So we've got people in the industry who are afraid of not knowing exactly what it is when we start to bring sports psychology into it, or when we start talking about, reducing the amount of specialization in children and reducing the amount of time they're playing. There's this real fear that people are going to, they're not going to be able to function within that environment. The other piece of the puzzle is there is this, for some reason, we like to cling, because of that fear of change, to antiquated thoughts and ideas. If it worked for me, it will work for the next person. If it worked 50 years ago, it will work today. The problem is every other science and every other quote-unquote profession, whether it's pilots, engineers, doctors, lawyers, every other profession has continued to evolve as our knowledge base has evolved, as silent science has evolved, and as the people within that space have evolved. We don't fly planes the same way we did 50 years ago. Our doctors don't practice the same way they did 50 years ago, and yet we're still seeing the same practices in coaching because it's familiar and we're comfortable. And
what part of the country are you at, Reed? Where are you?
Southern California, San Diego.
Okay. All right. And, yes, the challenge in all aspects, as youth sports become a very, very big business, one of my frequent guests, screenwriter of the upcoming documentary Youth Sports, the film, Joe Franco, and the, you know, the $15 billion a year business, and the pressure is on, the pressure to play hurt, the pressure, again, like you mentioned, to push specialization. However, one of the chapters in my book is called The Prodigy Sports. Gymnastics, figure skating, ballet, these kids don't want to play other sports. You could tell them all day about that's the best way. So that's a whole other challenge that we've seen. But I always ask people like yourself, Coach Reed, in your world, that's why I ask you how your psychology skills are. Right? How's your psychology skills with the parents and the coaches and the kids?
I would hope, especially after having worked under Dr. Nelson for so long, that I'm getting better at it. I'm starting to learn that it's about turning that back around on the people around me. So when I start to get the pushback, I need to ask more questions. Why all the behavior, the stuff that we do with positive discipline with children in sports is about understanding we're punishing or we're attaching things to behaviors when behaviors come from underlying thoughts, feelings, and emotions. And so if we can help kids understand those thoughts, feelings, and emotions, we can eliminate behaviors. It's the same thing with our parents and coaches. This huge fear of change, or if there's this desire to win or to specialize or whatever those feelings are coming from parents and coaches, those emotions are driving those behaviors. So my psychology has gotten better because I've started asking more questions. Instead of telling them, you're doing this wrong and this is how you should do it, I ask them, you know, what are they thinking? Why they want to do it this way? Is there a different way? How did you come to this decision? So I start pushing that psychology and turning it back on them to get them in their own head thinking about what's driving the behaviors.
So with your various programs that you have online, I know that you're a speaker, and Bob, what's the best website for people to find out about you and your programs?
That was one of my problems. My mentor herself said, Reed, I have no clue where to go to find you and what to do. So go to coachreed.com. I will be unifying everything under that. My big focus moving forward is this positive discipline space because it's something new in coaching, and it really allows me to unlock all the pieces of the puzzle. If I can get coaches to start to see value in these tool cards, then we can give them the tools. And then from there, we can do online courses or speaking engagements, et cetera, and that's the knowledge they need. And then I'm doing one-on-one mentor programs, which is the resources. So it's always about tools,
some of the biggest problems we have, Coach, one of the chapters in my book is called Youth Sports and Drugs, where you have half the kids living on over-the-counter pain medicine in order to participate. This is one of the main points I make for coaching parents, sports parents, is if your son or daughter needs pain medicine to participate, you're over the line. You're pushing it. And this is a gigantic problem, especially in the United States, where you can't turn on the TV for 5 minutes without them pushing constantly. You know, it's amazing. Sometimes people on the sports doc, they don't realize, Coach, United States is one of only two countries in the world, New Zealand's the other, that allows TV advertising of drugs. Constant advertising. So these kids assume it's normal. Our culture assumes it's normal. And this is why 80% of the pain pills worldwide are in the United States. And we don't have to explain what's going on with the opioid epidemic. So again, having this education constantly for parents who are looking for a scholarship, trying to get on the latest traveling team, looking to sometimes push these kids much, much too aggressively, then we start running into these overuse injuries. You know that 20% of Tommy John surgery today, the famous elbow surgery, is done on teenagers. It's nuts.
Crazy.
So
I've talked to Tommy John, the son. Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. And here's the problem. So you see it in all the other realms, too, like online marketing and stuff. What we have in youth sports is we've got some phenomenal marketers, but we're lacking mechanics. And so the marketers are able to press those pain points, create that fear of missing out. If you don't get your kid in sports year-round, she won't get the scholarship. If you don't put your kid with a trainer at 6 years old in the gym, they won't be big enough to compete at 10. And it's all of this fear of missing out, and these marketers are so good at pushing the pain point, but we're not creating solutions. I don't take my car to the marketer that created the ad for the mechanic. I take my car to the mechanic who knows how to fix it. And we need more people in the industry who are actually creating solutions. Marketers, more mechanics.
Yes, get some orthotics on those tires is what we say on the,
exactly.
on the Sports Doctor. Everybody, you are listening to the Sports Doctor. I'm Dr. Bob Weil, sports podiatrist. You can go to my website, sportsdoctorradio.com. You can go to radio shows. You can listen to shows, gosh, up to 10 years ago. Endless array of experts in all areas of sports medicine, wellness, fitness, authors, doctors, coaches. And you can listen to whatever you would like. If you go over to newspaper articles and magazines, you could read an array of articles we've been involved with in all aspects, again, of sports medicine, fitness, and wellness, the role of the foot in sports, so many different other areas. A lot of the articles I've written for one of my sponsors, Lower Extremity Review, on the role of the foot. We're talking with Coach Reed Maltby. He's the founder of Raising Excellence. He trains coaches. He's a real educator, right smack in the middle of our world with the challenge of youth sports. I know you did a TED Talk back in 2015, didn't you?
Yeah, I sure did.
Echoes Beyond the Game, was it?
Yes, sir.
Yes, and that's got to be quite an experience, I would assume.
It absolutely was. It was transformational. My life is different, and the trajectory that I'm on is different because of having the courage to step out there and share my views.
You know, the whole world of youth sports has become, again, such a big business. And what really counts is two things. One, can we prevent injuries and problems? Two, for those who are in that group, how can we enhance performance? Step or two quicker, better balance, better agility, all of these things. Of course, you have to remember you're working with the world of kids. Hey, coach, it's got to be fun, right? Is fun mixed in with what you do?
Exactly. And as you know, Amanda Visick's research, children define fun differently than us. And so we have to understand those 81 different ways that they define
fun. That is a great point. Children define fun differently. I really want to pick up on that when we come back talking with Coach Reed Maltby. We're out there in Southern California. You're listening to The Sports Doctor. We'll be right back, everybody. Hey, it's Dr. Bob. School Uniforms by Tommy Hilfiger is setting a new standard within the school uniform market. More schools are understanding the value that uniforms provide, school pride and identification being one of them. Another is the well-recognized reduction of student pressure to keep up with classmates in the real world of what to wear each day to school. School Uniforms by Tommy Hilfiger provides amazing quality and value to its partner schools and families. It is truly the first brand in this market that students are excited about wearing. Go to the website. GlobalSchoolWear.com. GlobalSchoolWear.com. Hey, we are back live from Chicago. It's the Sports Doctor. I'm Dr. Bob Weil, sports podiatrist. We're talking with Coach Reed Maltby. He's an innovator in so many areas of coaching coaches and adding education to the mix of youth sports. We were just talking about his TED Talk in 2015, Echoes Beyond the Game. But we were mentioning, the importance of fun. You're working with kids. It's so important that it's fun. And you mentioned that, you know, the definition of a child on what fun is compared to the adults might be two different stories. Can you expand on that a little?
I can, with a really quick story. My son years back came to me and said, Dad, I got the coolest video game. You're going to love it. I want you to play it. It's so much fun. It's so awesome looking. And he pulls up this. I couldn't wait to get away from pixelated graphics. I mean, why are you back at pixelated? That's what my son loved. It wasn't what I loved. It's what he loved. And if you look at design experience, companies that make products, online designers, game designers, they don't design for themselves. They design for people using them. So video game designers design for kids. As coaches and parents, we're crafting a youth sport experience that's designed for us. We're defining what should be fun for the kids, and not asking them. So when we run a practice, we think that funnest work is completely different than what the kids did. What would happen if we flipped that and said, hey, kids, what's fun to you? How do you define fun? Which is what Amanda Visick did in her research. And we started to design practices and to design a sport experience around what the kids want to do. Would they come back to sports?
Yes, a lot of times I would label this whole world as children playing adult sports with adult rules. And many times as we start getting away from playground where the kids are having a good time enjoying themselves, whatever their rules happen to be, and we start getting into structure, I think that was one of the things where we saw over the years, Little League turned around one day and they realized, holy cow, we got 40% less kids. They don't want to be in the league anymore. They're not interested. It's too much of a hassle and pressure. And I think they really, really learned a lesson regarding, again, putting these kinds of rules. So I guess looking, coach is a great idea for any coach in any particular program, which is including talking to their youngsters regarding what do they consider to be fun, and including that. In your world, Coach Reed, what are the ages that you're usually paying attention to, roughly?
I've worked with them as young as two. When I do my work, when I consult with soccer shops, they start at 2 years old with their children in the minis program. And so we're already looking at, and at two-out sport. They're child development experts, so it's about movement patterns. And you understand this, being a doctor. It's about proper movement patterns and being able, you know, the kinesiology behind it and being able to spatially relate. And then it's about character values and cooperation and social learning. And then we layer in just some technical skills with the ball. But more importantly, what we're doing is we're building that foundation of fun. So anytime I train a group of soccer shots, if I tell them that they are the foundation for these kids, they're instilling the joy and passion for the game and that fun, that what we call that guttural scream that a kid does when they're just having a blast. Yeah, I'm having a blast. And if they can do that at a young age, those kids will get through the adversity in sports and stay with it because they've had that experience. And so you can get them started as early as possible, but even at 3, 4 years old, 28 years old, they're still having fun. 20-year-olds, actually, their brains aren't fully developed, so we should still be trying to find the ways to ignite their brains with fun activities. Even if they're elite athletes, they need to have that fun piece.
Yes, it's interesting how in many instances where we'll see children could run and kick a ball, truly, at 3, 4, 5 years old. They sure can't catch, hit, and throw a baseball. And sometimes I go to my grandson, we're playing in some of these leagues, I see these kids 7, 8 years old, and the skills to throw and hit, a lot of times it's much, much too early. One of my beefs with soccer is they're putting these kids in cleats at earlier and earlier ages. So here's my pearl for the day for you, Coach Reed, where we see that the heel is one of the most susceptible areas with a giant growth center. And most of the problems we see in youth sports, especially soccer, is aggravated with cleats. We'd be much better off with multi-surface shoes as compared to using cleats so early. But that's interesting when you're talking about a character and paying attention to all of these kinds of things. And how do you find the attitudes and relationships of parents tuning in to what you're talking about and paying attention to? Good luck to you. How do you find parents tuning in?
Well, I guess for me, I got lucky. I started at 16, so I've had mentors all along the way who were very good, and I was having fun while I was doing it. I wasn't going to coach, but I wasn't having fun. So the parents have always been drawn to my style because I'm just a big kid when I'm out there with the players. For me, I'm going to have fun, they're going to have fun, and we're going to do the things that we enjoy doing when we play. In the process, I'm going to layer in some skills and tactics for them, but I'm also going to make it about, hey, I'm going to build better people because better coaching for a better world. Generation, I've got to make sure that I'm instilling in you the values I want for you to succeed in life. And because I've done that, I've always had engagement from my parents, and they've always seen me as a partner in helping raise their child. And so they were the ones that would come to me and say, hey, you're 22. My son looks up to you. He won't listen to me because I'm just dad. Can you have a conversation with him about his grades? Or can you have a conversation? And I was able to be that partner that sort of helped them, just like educational institutions are partnering with parents. We as coaches have got to stop pushing our parents away. no matter what we do. They're on that far sideline or sitting on the far side of the court or ice. They're always there. So instead of shoving them away.
Because parents, a lot of times, even though my overwhelming experience with sports parents has always been excellent, but boy, they get a bad knock. You know, one of my radio guests has been, I don't know if you know Gordon McClellan.
I love Gordon.
Yes, his organization is Working with Parents in Sports. And he's a big parent advocate when it comes to those things. And you know what's really amazing is if we were looking, again, to win and to be successful and competitive, a lot of the principles you're talking about really go into making that happen. It's not like you're less competitive or you're not playing also to win, but you're including all of these other important aspects of it. Is no wonder it's so successful.
Well, what's interesting is about 8 or 9 years ago, I was in my area, and we had two really great teams, and his coaching style was vastly different from mine. And he was a demeanor, and he pitted the kids against each other, and he coached out of fear and all that other stuff. You watch my TED talk and kind of coach. And I was the opposite. And I can remember having a conversation where that coach was like, yeah, but I get results. And I said, I get the same results, but to what end? Well, we flash forward 10 years from now, my kids aren't seeing, my players are flourishing inside and outside the game. And we're finding out that the players that played for that coach, their parents are coming to me saying, can you talk to my kid and help fix what was done? Or they've quit the sport completely. Or
yes, they've quit.
Sports
they've
is a
quit.
Marathon.
This is what Little League faced. This is, again, youth sports is facing a big challenge of participation. And we'll save for another show the whole world of tackle football with youth. Really, it's a whole separate entity. But there's definitely a challenge with participation because of this pressure, whether it's the pressure to play year-round. You know, I have a term on the Sports Doctor. I call it intelligent rest. And it means exactly what it says, the tremendous importance of adding and paying attention to recovery and having time off and all of these other kinds of things. We all know the abuses of some of the coaches, even doctors in sports that we've seen, like in gymnastics. It's horrifying. I call them Svengali coaches, these super disciplinarians in so many different areas. And you're coming from a totally different direction and probably have, like you said, a heck of a lot more success when you're looking at how these kids develop.
It's the 20-year game plan. I'm not game planning for next weekend's game. I'm game planning for 20 years from now as a coach.
20 what years, am I doing coach, I can't believe it. We're
kids.
Out of time. Coach Reed Maltby, I want to thank you so much. Give me again, are you going to talk, give me that website one more time, the email.
CoachReed.com, and it's R-E-E-D.
CoachReed.com. Thank you so much. Great information. Definitely going to have you back. Hold on, please, Reed. We're going to be right back, everybody. It's the Sports Doctor. Hey, everybody. Dr. Bob here. LER, Lower Extremity Review Magazine, is celebrating their 10th anniversary. It's been a decade of providing key clinical and practical information about concerns, conditions, and treatment solutions for the lower extremity, both sports and non-sports alike. LER is the only multidisciplinary publication for doctors of all specialties, educators, therapists, and trainers. They inform practitioners on current developments in the diagnosis, treatment, and prevention of lower extremity injuries. LER prides itself on editorial integrity and evidence-based content. Their tagline, collaborative care for better outcomes, says it all. Hey, colleagues, go to lermagazine.com. Hey, everybody, live from Chicago. We are back. It's the Sports Doctor, and the Sports Doctor's In segment. You know, sometimes I have these great guests like today, and all of a sudden, wow, we're almost out of time. Great information. And the cavalcade of great guests continues. Next week, I have a colleague, one of the country's leading sports podiatrists, the creator of the Richie Brace, Dr. Doug Richie, will be joining me. And then we're going to have a fitness expert, Jackie Lupo, and her famous dad, Joe Lupo, one of the pioneers in the world of fitness, Lifetime Achievement Award winner with the National Fitness Hall of Fame. Following week, we're going to have sports agent Pete Rutili joining me. This show, we're going to be talking about the world of CBD. Pete will share some of his experiences with some of his athletes getting help with this. And then Paul Dagnino, who's been on before. Paul is the creator of iCor and American Motor, a couple of leading companies in the whole world of CBD. So we got some great stuff coming up, as always. And let's see. Email Tom. My 11-year-old soccer player son has been diagnosed with Sievers syndrome of his heels. You know, Tom, it's funny. I was just mentioning that in my discussion with Coach Reed, who was my pearl for the day from the sports doctor. And it was the problems with heels in growing kids. There's a large growth center on the back and bottom of the heel, and it's easily inflamed if we're running and jumping, and it can act up, cause all sorts of discomfort. It could fool us because it comes and goes. And Sievers, they used to call it Sievers disease, but this isn't a disease. It's a syndrome, irritation of that growth center. Get your kid out of the cleats if he's in them. Get him into a multi-nub shoe. If your son has had persistent problems, Tom, ongoing problems, we've had great success with orthotics over the years to solve the problem. If there's a mechanical component, imagine a young boy has high arches. Imagine another player has pronated or flat feet. Both of those conditions, which are common, can aggravate the already inflamed growth center. So you have to make sure you're paying attention to some intelligent rest. You've got to back off from running, jumping activities if this is active at this point in time. Sometimes we'll use heel cups. We'll make a big point. See podiatry. Make sure your son's in the right soccer shoe and see whether or not he's a candidate for orthotics if his problems have been consistent. Jerry says, my mom is a diabetic. Should she see podiatry routinely? Jerry, yes, she should. Podiatry many times is the profession that first diagnoses diabetes because the symptoms show up in the feet, the furthest area from the heart. A patient might come in and say, my feet are always burning. Another patient might say, gee, you know, I've got so much numbness. I'm losing feeling in my feet. Somebody else might talk about the fact that they've got shooting pains in their feet. And then through blood work, et cetera, we find out that this man or woman might be a diabetic. Even if it's toenail care, we want to include podiatry so that somebody is not causing trouble, irritation around toenails. Often we'll see discomfort with diabetes. You know, I got leg aches, I've got foot and ankle pain, and orthotics, proper shoe changes can be very, very important. So I would include podiatry in your mom's group of doctors if she doesn't already have, even if she doesn't have complaints, it makes sense to have this kind of supervision, even if it's a couple of times a year. Steve says, let's talk about over-the-counter arch supports. You know, Steve, over-the-counter arch supports are not custom or prescription orthotics. They do, though, have a role in various areas of sports and fitness. You can walk into a running shoe store, you can walk into a Walgreens, and there's a whole wall of shoe inserts. It can drive you nuts. But as a first aspect of trying something, often we might tell somebody, you know, pick up a pair of Dr. Scholl's supports, pick up a pair of Superfeet, and see whether or not these are helpful. Often we'll see that they are a good indicator that orthotics really could be the answer, but they are not custom orthotics, which are made individually for that particular person. And often I'll hear people say, gee, you know, I had orthotics and I tried them, they didn't work. And they were talking about something that's over the counter. So my advice is, if there is a reason for your looking at over the counter supports, then you might want to include getting a diagnosis, getting an analysis from podiatry to see what is behind your concerns. You know, it surprises people that 75% of foot type is inherited. Gee, you know, this young 15-year-old got bunion and hammer toes developing just like her mom and just like her grandma had. Gee, you know, this young boy's got bow legs, high arches, just like his dad or his granddad. And many times we're looking at the history to be also paying attention. So you might want to look at that situation before we start depending on arch supports, especially if they're over the counter, for solving problems. Denise says, you mentioned in your book, you have a chapter called Prodigy Sports. What are you talking about? The Prodigy Sports, Denise, are, think of gymnastics. Think of figure skating, my subspecialty. Think of ballet as an example. Even soccer and tennis, where we might be looking at 11, 12, 13-year-olds, this is all they want to do. Now, interestingly enough, you hear it talked about all the time, don't have your son or daughter specialize. Have them play different sports. Use different parts of the body. Yes, yes, yes. We agree with all of that. Unless that boy or girl happens to be looking at one of these sports. You know, my poster boy, the 2010 men's Olympic gold medal figure skating champion, grew up in Naperville, Illinois, Evan Lysacek. He was 10 years old when I put orthotics in his skates. 12 years later, he was the gold medalist, best in the world. I'm still putting orthotics in 10-year-old's skates. They don't want to play other sports. They want to maybe skate 5-6 days a week. That young gymnast might feel the same. So that's what I mean by the prodigy sports. And these kids, we recommend bringing a physical therapist, a personal trainer in to help design a good program of strengthening for your son or daughter with the fact that they're doing one sport in mind. The concern is repetitive motion injuries by using the same parts of the body same way all the time, like constant jumping, you know, hitting 5,000 tennis balls a week, et cetera, and doing the same thing all the time. So even though we would love to have and recommend children playing lots of different sports, there's no evidence that specializing very, very early makes you in that you're going to be a better athlete, especially in the sports like basketball or football or baseball, but these prodigy sports, these specialty sports, is a little bit different story. Jordan says, I worry about persistent ankle sprains. Should I be? Yes, Jordan, you should be. The ankle is a complicated multi-directional joint, and it's the most commonly injured area of the body. So you really want to get under some supervision to get a diagnosis, see what you're dealing with, and get on the road to proper strengthening and rehab. Like I tell athletes of all sports at all levels, at all ages, strengthen your feet and ankles. Rubber bands, balancing on surfaces is very, very important. But Jordan, you need a diagnosis. What's going on so that you could make proper correction? Because the ankle sprains could be a lifelong problem, drive you crazy. See you next week, everybody. It's the Sports Doctor, live from Chicago. Thank you.